The Music Business Worldwide podcast is supported by Volley Music, a leading financial management platform for the music industry. Volley enables you to track expenses, approve invoices, and make payments 24/7, 365 days a year. For your free trial, head to volleymusic.com. That's VOLYmusic.com.
Hello and welcome to Music Business Worldwide's Talking Trends podcast, which as ever is supported by Volley Entertainment. My name is Tim Ingham, founder of MBW, and Talking Trends is where we look behind one or two recent headlines that have grabbed the attention of music business and try and dig a little bit deeper and give our take on what's gone on. I'm delighted, as ever, to be joined by Los Angeles-based Charlie Dattry, a music industry veteran, a consultant, and a man with a litany of achievements across his career. He's also the founder of Dattry Songs, CC Music Royalties, and Best Quality M&M. And if I just go and pick a couple of the bullet points from his career, Charlie has spent time at multiple labels, including Def Jam and Columbia Records, as well as nearly two decades at the company we now know as Disney Music Group, worked with many high-profile artists. I won't name them again here, but he helped create and market over 200 soundtracks, I learned last week. Charlie, welcome back to Talking Trends. Please pick a topic from recent music industry headlines that has grabbed your attention and tell me your thoughts on it.
Well, good to be back, Tim. And I'm going to take something that at first glance may not seem like it's an important music type subject for this week, but I really believe it is. And that's server farms. Why is that important, Charlie? Well, it's important because Blackstone, who are the backers of Merck Mercuriadis and Hypnosis in its private form, and also Hypnosis Songs, the management company, announced last week that they had trebled their money in 4 years in their initial investments in server farms, and that they were going to now take that investment to as much as $100 billion. Why does that relate? Besides where you store all your family photos and all of the music and all of the DSPs and all that is all stored out there, it means scale. And when I talk about scale, it's one of those things that in music, I really think people need to pay more attention to, which is that there's a battle now for the public side of Hypnosis. There are two groups that both have compelling sounding arguments. You have Merck, who has a fantastic management contract that gives him a pretty good ace, in my opinion. But he's also backed by one of the largest pools of capital in the world. So if it's going to take another $100 million or $200 million and it pencils out and they have a thesis to bolt these two pieces together, which already have continuity of management, there's no question of them being able to pull it off. If Blackstone is happy with the private side of Hypnosis, which again, none of us see those numbers. They don't have to be announced. They're not announced. They're not picked over the way the public did. And the counterparty is making the argument that Merck overpaid or that their valuations were high. And they're saying bad things about his character. Well, a lot of people think he's a great champion of songwriters. He's a great champion of artists. And that he was actually putting a fair valuation that a lot of sharp penciled accountants never really got about music, and that the thesis going forward for the next decade and a half is fantastic in music. Worldwide growth, easy, low overhead access to your audience. They don't say that all of the products have been developed that need to be developed to serve the various types of fans, but it doesn't mean that their thesis is wrong. And so the money that Blackstone makes in one investment helps gird their loins for whatever battles they may have in their other investments, so long as they believe that their proposition is correct and that there is value in music and that music is coming into a really stable, fairly golden age of success worldwide.
I'm just sitting here thinking there probably isn't a single listener out there who doesn't know what you're talking about. But just in case, to catch up those who've been on Honolulu or wherever for the last 2 weeks, I'm sure they've got good internet access there. Charlie is talking about the seemingly what's going to be the sale of the Hypnosis Songs Fund portfolio or its share capital more technically. For a minute there, it looked like Concord may be the acquirer and may still be the acquirer, backed by financing, debt financing from Apollo. But Blackstone, which is obviously Charlie's pick of his topic this week, came out a couple of days after Concord and announced a proposal whereby they said that they're going to exceed Concord's bid, although they plan to exceed Concord's bid by about $100 million, and that they would like to buy Hypnosis Songs fund. As Charlie pointed out, there is a intertwined relationship between Blackstone and the founder of the Hypnosis brand. That's the new Hypnosis brand, not the original photography company and artwork company. And that's Mercury Artists. So, and Blackstone is the majority owner of the investment advisor to Hypnosis Songs Fund. This gets a little complicated. Their name is also Hypnosis Song Management, which is minority owned by Mercury Artists. And that company has a call option, which means, in essence, so long as it withstands legal scrutiny, if there is an outside bidder like a Concord who comes in and bids on Hypnosis Songs Fund and the investment advisor is at any point terminated, let's imagine that Concord buys Hypnosis Songs Fund and then terminates Hypnosis Song Management. Hypnosis Song Management can buy the portfolio via a hostile takeover. In the hypothetical situation, the new owner wouldn't really have a say in it for a set price. And that set price, just to cut to the chase, is going to be whatever it's publicly valued at and or has been valued at in any deal. I mean, there's loads to say on this. I think your point on the server farms and just the sheer scale, the word you used, of what Blackstone is up to outside of music versus this being really ultimately a small bet for Blackstone in the grand scheme of things. And the fact, as you point out, that they've had access to numbers in the private fund that Mercury Artists runs that they own, and they like the look of the numbers. There's a lot of interesting things just on the surface here. The first thing is, as we record this, we're waiting for Blackstone to announce their firm offer. I understand now, I was informed today, that what that really means, the difference between their proposal and their firm offer, is because they're out making sure they can get the financing, which obviously I don't think is going to take Blackstone very long to do the deal. They have offered around $1.5 billion. There is around $600 million of debt in the Hypnosis Songs Fund. So that values the portfolio at around $2.1 billion. And I suppose the last thing, after all that explanation and context, $2.1 billion is higher than Shot Tower Capital. They did an independent valuation of Hypnosis Songs Fund for the current board, and they valued it at lower than that, even at their the high point of their estimate. I find that interesting. And Citrin Cooperman, there was a parting of the ways between them and Hypnosis Songs Fund. They were their long-term independent valuer. In end of September last year, Citrin Cooperman, run by Barry Masarsky, or the music valuing part is run by Barry Masarsky, they valued Hypnosis Songs Fund portfolio at $2.6 billion. We will see. Concord might come back in by the time this is published and have put a $2.2 billion bid in, or value the portfolio at $2.2 billion with a bid. And then Blackstone might come back at 2.25 or 2.3. The call option that Blackstone and Mercury Artists has, it doesn't negate the ability of another company to buy Hypnosis. Indeed, even if they triggered the call option by terminating Hypnosis Song Management, they would have to match whatever Hypnosis Songs Fund is worth. So it relies on Blackstone ultimately being willing to put in the price. If Concord come in and pay a penny more, it could get tricky for Blackstone. That's not the way I think it's going to go. The way I think it's going to go is that Blackstone is going to buy these assets. They may buy them at a $2.1 billion valuation. They may buy them at, if Concord wants to tussle a little more, it may get to 2.2, maybe even 2.3. But they will ultimately, I believe, end up with Blackstone because, to your point, not only do they have vast resources that far exceed the figures we're talking about here, but they also have involvement in this call option, which gives them a great advantage. And to your point, the fact that Mercury Artists was able to negotiate that at the beginning of Hypnosis Songs Fund is, if we're looking at it from his point of view, a great testament to his negotiating abilities, and it's come up trumps by the looks of things.
Well, yeah. And the reality is that having been through this before with, to some degree, in the CD boom with Sanctuary, I think that somebody who truly believes in the value of music would want control, because there's the oldest line in any market where there's buying and selling that goes on. What is it worth? And so people try and cast mud on somebody else's valuation if they say it's more, when they want to play less. They want to have their own valuator that says it's worth less. The reality is, in a free market, is that what it's worth is what someone will pay. And we don't, any of us know. We are all just the crows sitting on the fence, pecking at the various ups and downs and statements that people make. And if the statements have the feeling of fact, of absolute fact, then a lot of us, you nod your head, you say, oh, that makes a lot of sense. And then somebody else who seems to be mad at the moment proves to be right. There are obvious excesses that can happen. And I just think that the combination of Merck and Blackstone is very strong. And they have a vision, and they have discipline, and they have a lot of people with a lot of sharp pencils picking their numbers, and they're right more than they're wrong.
Just one more thing to say on it, really, that it's not just been Concord versus Blackstone. Hypnosis Songs Fund's board has pointed out that there have been a number of previous bids for the company and or inquiries for the portfolio, I should say. We know that one of those came from BMG at a lower price than the 2.1, or at least that's what's being reported from fairly solid looking sources. And I myself have heard in the last 24 hours, really interestingly, that there was an inquiry from EQT, who are the Swedish private equity company who are currently going through a private takeover process for Believe in tandem with Danila de Gallery. So these names keep on cropping up. They clearly see something in music they like the look of, whether it be Blackstone, EQT or others. So there has been, it's fair to say, a degree of doom and gloom around the catalog M&A market over the past 2.5 years, especially as interest rates started to balloon. That's all fair enough, but they're still a hot asset from what I can see. Morgan Stanley have chucked a bunch of money in with Cobalt to buy things. There's KKR are involved. Apollo are involved with Concord. These are huge Wall Street names and their interest.
You touched on a really important point of that, because the source of your capital, the raising of interest rates absolutely affects people that have bank financing. And there's something like in America, three major banks that write what used to be called copyright mortgages, and you're going to be affected by that. But there are other pools of money. There were people that if you go back before the boom, if you go back to the earlier days, the Reservoirs and the companies such as that, or certain European funds, where they had pools of retirement money that needs a long-term growth of their assets because they're obligated to pay out at the end. And these pools were investing in the darkest days when there were plenty of people, at least here in America, that were saying, well, there's not going to be a music business. The phrase music wants to be free was repeated a lot. And the truth is, the cost of your capital is really important, which is why you need to take the wide view and understand that there are people whose capital doesn't cost the interest rates that we all worry about on our mortgage every month.
That is an extremely good point. And by and large, the bigger those companies are, the more sway they have. And so Blackstone is certainly, in the sense of private investments, one of the biggest, if not the biggest, in their field. So I know that there's a view that all of this is terribly unromantic. And I understand that ultimately these are songs that were born from the hurt and the love and the life experience of talented, creative people in tune with their soul and the earth. And now they're being traded around like cheap diamonds, pick whatever analogy. But on the flip side of that, I think seeing these highly institutionalized, highly experienced, and highly rich institutional investors fly into music and maintain their interest in music has to be exciting for the robustness of the industry itself and also for what the future holds. Anyway, we've talked lots about Blackstone. I just want to move us on to our second topic now, and I'm going to try and tie these two together with some skill. And all I can tell you about is my personal experience of both of them. So as Music Business Worldwide, like most of the trade media and indeed most of the financial media, were reporting on what was happening with bids flying in for Hypnosis and then Blackstone and Concord, et cetera, something else was happening in the music industry. And I think it's fair to say that in any other given week, this would have got a lot more scrutiny and had the spotlight shone on it far brighter than it did. And that is Spotify announcing that they are changing the way they pay mechanical royalties in the US. I'm going to do my best to, again, it's a fairly knotty topic, but I'm going to do my best to do an explainer and then give just a couple of views on it. Spotify some time ago brought audiobooks onto the service, I think in the last 12 months, it's around that time frame. So you may have noticed on your Spotify premium account, if you have one, that you're able to access audiobooks for a while. You're able to access all of them for free, I think. And now some of them upsell and some of them you have to be upsold to access, and some of them are available. In recent weeks, Spotify has launched what is we can roughly call an audiobook only subscription. I think it's $9.99 per month in the US. And what that means is that you can access, I think, 15 audiobooks on this app, but you don't have access to premium Spotify music. You have access to the ad-funded experience on Spotify for music. It's an audiobook-led subscription. That's very important for what comes next. So Spotify has announced that it now sees its app, its premium subscription, as a bundle. It sees it as a bundle in the eyes of an agreement between Spotify itself and the music publishers in the US via the Copyright Royalty Board's ruling in 2022. And by recategorizing the top tier, the Spotify Premium subscription as a bundle, it means that Spotify has to pay a lesser royalty rate for mechanical royalties than it did previously. It gets very complicated. I'm actually about to go and write all about this, but in essence, it means that what Spotify is arguing or how it's positioning itself is saying that music is only worth a certain proportion of your subscription, Charlie. So you may have been paying $9.99, then $10.99 a month for your Spotify subscription forever just for music, but they now believe that a proportion of that $9.99 should be assumed to be directed towards the audiobooks market and audiobook publishers and authors, etc. Where this is going to get crystallized is in the probably the back end of this year, the second half of this year, Spotify will announce a price rise. This is all prediction, this speaking to sources and what have you. Spotify will announce a price rise in the US. So I think it's currently $10.99 for a Spotify Premium individual subscription. That will go to $11.99 and you'll get an email that says something along the lines of, hey, you no longer have Spotify Premium. Again, this is my guesswork. This is what I think will happen. Hey, you no longer have a Spotify Premium account. You have a Spotify Music Plus Audiobooks account, and it's $11.99 a month. If you would like to demote your account back to $10.99, you can choose a music-only account. If you would like audiobooks only, you can choose this. The question for me is realistically how many people are going to actually do that, manually switch their account down to a music-only account. If you had a music-only account, you would pay a higher rate of royalties to the music publishing and songwriter community. I would guess right here and now, if I had to pick a number out of the air, 60, 70% of people are just going to go, meh, two more dollars or one more dollar a month and I get free audiobooks. Great. The big assumption on the part of Spotify is because they launched this audiobook only app, which is $9.99 a month, they are now able to argue, oh, well, that is the value of audiobooks for Spotify consumers. And therefore, audiobooks, I think it's 40-something percent versus 50-something percent, but roughly it has parity in the value of your Spotify subscription versus music. Ultimately, that is a lot of talk and a lot of explanation for something that leads me to the headlines here, which are Spotify has put out a statement while announcing this recategorization of its premium into a bundle in the eyes of the CRB agreement. They put out a statement saying that Spotify will pay music publishers more in 2024 than it did in 2023. Unless I'm missing something, they are deliberately referring to global payouts for music publishing. They are not referring specifically to US payouts for music publishing. And that is because by my calculations, from what I understand, I'm waiting on a couple of confirmations. There is no way that if Spotify get away with this, and I'll explain why they might not, if they get away with it, it's not going to have a material deleterious impact on the amount of money that's paid to songwriters, publishers. Songwriters and publishers are going to be paid a lot less from Spotify in 2024 or the back end of 2024 than they were versus in the back end of 2023 because of this recategorization. And I know that the Music Publishers Association, National Music Publishers Association, run by David Israelite, who represents the interests of publishers in the US, is going to fight tooth and nail. I wouldn't be surprised to see legal action. But Spotify, clearly, they have smart legal counsel. They have internal business affairs people who have been looking very closely at their 2022 agreement via the CRB, and they think they can get away with this. So sparks are going to fly. But ultimately, if Spotify get away with it, which they clearly think they can, there is going to be a significant downgrade in the amount of money moving from Spotify to publishers and songwriters in 2024.
And Tim, I've got one point here that struck me while you were running down the detail that I wonder about, which is that part of getting the consumer, and remember that part of this is based on a price rise and their subscription price in their leading markets, to get the consumer to say, well, geez, it's another dollar, it's another $2 a month, to inhibit the amount of people that take the music only, you have to feel like there's a lot of value. So whether or not the audiobook subscription at $9.99 a month gets tremendous uptake, which could affect the legal argument in terms of how you apportion the value of this blended subscription. Part of the win for Spotify, it strikes me, would be a great mass of consumers says, well, it's a really good value, so I'm not going to downgrade and I'm going to take the higher price. no matter if I ultimately use audiobooks all that much, because a higher retention when you raise your prices means a lot more money. And the rest of it is, it could be they win in two ways. I think that fairness is something I'm after in the music business, as much as we talk about finance somewhat on this program a lot. And the reality is that if they apportion that new blended subscription fairly, and it doesn't feel like they're going to initially, then I think you have less of an argument from the music business side, and you may have a win in retaining your consumers at a higher price point.
It's the detail of what margin is going to audiobooks rights holders, what margin is being retained by Spotify, and what margin is going to music rights holders. That is the big question. I don't think anyone would deny that having more money in the pot and having a happier, ultimately a happier consumer is not a bad thing. But as the music industry starts to have these conversations, as we have, Charlie, a number of times about streaming plateau, the potential for price rises, but also the potential to better monetize fans or super fans, as is the vogue term, who are true ardent music lovers, who would put music as their number one or number two thing in the world to do, listen to, experience, better monetizing those people, it kind of bumps up against Spotify offering on the one hand, oh, we're going to help you access all these super fans and better monetize them. Oh, and by the way, on the other hand, we're going to stiff you a bit and change the rules here. And we've noticed a loophole in 2022. I don't actually have a huge problem, just to be clear, with Spotify moving some of your monthly subscription to the audiobooks industry. That's absolutely fair enough. Well, I have a problem with two things personally. Number one, this idea of parity, I think, and again, these are rough figures, but I've worked it out. I think it's around, they would treat your subscription, as I understand it, around 54% of it would be deemed music in terms of the value of it, and the balance would be deemed audiobooks. Well, I don't think that's fair to start off with, because I think if you did a survey of 10,000 Spotify premium subscribers today and said, hey, did you know you have audiobooks? They'll say, oh yeah, I've noticed those. And then you'd say, what percentage of value would you put on those versus the music that you listen to every month? And they would say, I don't know, 2%. I'm speaking personally here, but I'm sure there's many, a high proportion of subscribers that would feel that way. Secondly, I think Spotify, in some of its language, is saying, well, this is fair because there are other examples of digital services that pay mechanical royalties on a bundle basis. And that's a good argument and a strong argument. I would guess what they're pointing to there is the second biggest by revenue, the second probably by subscribers, I'm guessing, but the second biggest music subscription streaming service in the world, YouTube Music. Most people that subscribe to YouTube Music, myself included, subscribe through YouTube Premium because, to our point, it's added value. I don't just get access, ad-free access to YouTube Music app. I also get ad-free access to YouTube, a premium experience on that platform. However, there is a long history, and YouTube could pull up reams and reams of data on myself saying, look how much he used YouTube before he got to YouTube Music. So there must have been an appropriate value placed on us removing ads and giving him a premium YouTube experience and music being an addition to that. Spotify trying to do this retrospectively, and that's what I think is borderline sneaky, is to launch an audiobook only tier and put an arbitrary price on it of $9.99, and then say, well, that is what audiobooks are worth in Charlie's bundle subscription on Spotify. I think that is really looking out for their own interests and not relying, which is unusual for Spotify and Daniel Ek, not relying on the data, the consumer data.
Yeah, absolutely true. I agree with you.
Well, we could go on and on, Charlie. Got much more to say on Blackstone and Hypnosis and Spotify. Much, much more to say on Spotify, but maybe we'll get a chance another time. It's been a pleasure having you on. And if you've been listening to Talking Trends, we hope you enjoyed this and that you'll be back with us soon.